is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Sudanese authorities have announced this morning that they have actually contained a failed coup attempt that has been planned by a group of military and civilian officials who have been identified as the supporters of the austere former president Omar al-Bashir.
That's journalist Michael Atiti, who reports for South Sudan In Focus program from Khartoum on the reported coup attempt today in Sudan. Details coming up. Also, Tunisia's president says emergency measures he announced in July will remain in place. And the Kingdom of Belgium says the trial of Paul Rusesabagina in Rwanda was not fair. These stories and more on African News Tonight. But first, our top story. Authorities from Sudan's transitional government say they have put down a coup attempt today and arrested a number of military officers. Journalist Michael Atit, who reports for VOA South Sudan In Focus program from Khartoum, spoke with my colleague Kate Pound-Dawson about the suspected plot.
Sudanese authorities have announced this morning that they have actually contained a failed coup attempt that has been planned by a group of military and civilian officials who have been identified as the supporters of the austere former president Omar al-Bashir. Sudanese security operatives have, came across information arrested, according to Sudan's information minister Hamza Balul, who actually went on stayed on TV and released a statement that the situation is now under control, and they have arrested quite a number of people who have linked with this failed coup attempt. The minister Balul actually did not mention the number of people they have so far arrested, but he said the security operatives are still in search of anyone who have been in link with these coup attempts so far. So that is the situation that have been reported today in Khartoum.
What is known, or what is being said by the government, the transitional government, about who the alleged coup plotters are?
According to the information from the government, this coup attempt is being planned by a group of military officers who are mainly from the department of the town, which is located around 5 to 7 kilometers south of Khartoum. This group is headed by one of the top military officers, known as Bakrawi. This is the name that surfaced today on the in the report of the government, in the statement of the government, that they've arrested him and a few others who are his supporters. So
so it is apparently from an armored tank division of the military then. Now that this has been reported and the government says it is contained, what is the mood there in Sudan?
Around downtown, around Khartoum, and around the bridge that is linking Khartoum to the other town, which is Omdurman, where the state-owned media, radio, and TV is located, there were presence of heavy military deployment around the bridge. Even the bridge itself was blocked. No one could be allowed to use that bridge. So military tanks could be seen physically deployed around the parliament and around the TV and the radio. as well as around the presidential palace where the transitional government or the head of the transitional government, Al-Burhan, is based. But the rest of the town, the rest of the city, public transport are moving, shopping centers are remaining open, and people are, moving about their normal activities and normal situations.
That was reporter Michael Atit speaking with VOA's Kate Bond Dawson. There continue to be factions in the country that back former President Omar al-Bashir, who was ousted by the military and pro-democracy activists in 2019. The former president now is in prison in Sudan, awaiting trial on charges related to the 1989 coup that brought him to trial. The International Criminal Court in The Hague also charged him with crimes against humanity during the country's civil war and his campaign against residents of Darfur. Tunisian President Kais Saied said last night that emergency measures he announced in July, when he fired the prime minister and dissolved parliament, would remain in place. The crowd repeatedly interrupted his speech with shouts of approval. Several human rights groups have raised concerns about Saeed's actions, warning of increasing authoritarianism. Mongi Dahoudi, a Tunisian-American political analyst, discussed these latest developments with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi.
Now we are only 5 days away from the two-month mark since Kais Saied, the president of Tunisia, announced what he calls the exceptional measures, what other critics call a coup. So the pressure is mounting on him to at least form a government or appoint someone who would form a government. There's many political parties, civil society organizations in Tunisia, the labor union, partners of Tunisia from outside, the European Union, the international community in general, including the U.S., repeatedly called on him to at least tell us where does he want to take the country, to offer some kind of a roadmap. And he resisted all those calls up until tonight, where he said in clear terms that he is not going back on these measures. And it doesn't seem from the speech that he gave, it doesn't seem that he is going back to the parliament. He was very adamant that the parliament was a terrible institution. He painted this picture that all these ills and the corruption, and he kept talking about how members of parliament trading different laws and regulations for big sums of money up into like 150,000 dinars and so forth. So it was kind of a bizarre speech that he gave. It reminded us of some of the old days of Gaddafi, when he would deliver these incoherent speeches in front of a very rowdy, loud crowd, angry. That's what we saw, and this is something that we are not quite used to in Tunisia. This is a very frightening speech that he delivered. And so he was speaking about all these problems of the parliament, and the crowd was chanting. I mean, these are his supporters. They were called on by some of the social media and Facebook pages of his followers. They were summoned into the city of Sidi Bouzid, where the revolution of the 2010 started. And I think he picked this place to respond to the rallies and demonstrations that we saw over the weekend in Tunisia that called his actions a coup and called on him to take the country back to democracy.
Several human rights groups have raised concerns about President Saied's actions, warning of increasing authoritarianism, and Human Rights Watch plus Tunisian Association for the Defense of Individual Liberties have both issued warnings about the growth of arbitrary and politically motivated acts of repression after July 25th. Can you explain the reason behind such concerns?
Since July 25th, when the president announced these measures, he banned practically all members of parliament, all members of government, ministers, high-ranking officials, former and present. He banned business people, presidents and directors of major civil rights organizations, institutions in the country. He banned all of them from traveling without any court orders, without any procedures. He also placed several individuals under house arrest. He lifted the immunity on the members of parliament, and so some of them ended up in jail, others ended up in front of a military court. And there were some instances of harassment of some family members of these members of parliament, because some of them went into hiding. And so there was several cases of harassment to their families. All this made several human rights organizations and civil rights organizations within the country very nervous and called on him to respect the rights of Tunisians, even though he keeps repeating in many of his speeches and declarations that he is in total respect of the laws, total respect of the constitution. And it makes us wonder sometimes because, for example, he keeps saying that all those who were prevented from traveling overseas are the ones who have court cases. However, we know that Human Rights Watch at least listed more than 50 cases where these people have no court cases whatsoever, yet they were prevented from leaving the country. And so it makes us wonder if Taïssous Aïd actually is trying to lie to the Tunisian people, or he's in fact does not know how these practices, or there was some miscommunication within the ranks of the security and the border security that they miscarried his orders. These are not very clear and made several people wonder who's in charge here and who's calling the shots.
That was Monghi Dahoudi, a Tunisian-American political analyst, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi. Rwanda cancelled a meeting scheduled in New York with Belgian officials after the European country criticized the trial for Paul Rusesabagina as unfair. Rwanda said the statement reflects Belgium's contempt towards the Rwandan judicial system. Other countries also have criticized Rusesabagina's trial. Rusesabagina became famous for his efforts to protect hundreds of people during Rwanda's 1994 genocide, which became the basis for the Hollywood film Hotel Rwanda. He and 20 others were charged with 13 criminal offenses for their alleged connection to the FLN, a militia group that the Rwandan government accuses of terrorism. Rusesabagina was sentenced to 25 years. Is there a military solution to the insurgency in Mozambique's northern Cabo Delgado province? That's the question many in the security field have been asking since southern African countries plus Rwanda recently sent troops into the region. The militants say they're allied to the Islamic State or IS terror network. They claim to be fighting for greater access to wealth from natural gas deposits for locals. But their attacks on towns and villages have claimed thousands of lives and displaced hundreds of thousands of people since late 2017. Darren Taylor reports.
There are about 4,000 Southern African and Rwandese troops in Cabo Delgado. That's not enough to successfully oppose between 1 and 2,000 IS fighters, according to one of South Africa's top military analysts, Professor Abel Estereza.
You want to ask questions about whether the military will really be able to dominate the area with the forces that are deployed into that area at the moment, whether we will really be able to actually do what is required and what needs to be done.
Esther Razor is an expert in conflict strategy at the South African Military Academy. He also studied military history at the U.S. Military Academy, also known as West Point. The former colonel in the South African Army points out that Mozambique borders six countries, Eswatini, Malawi, South Africa, Tanzania, Zambia, and Zimbabwe.
A military commander will have to manage those borders if you want to be effective in setting up a counterinsurgency campaign, and it immediately brings the maritime domain into play.
Mozambique has a coastline of 2,500 kilometers. This makes it easy, says Estereza, for IS in Somalia to send weapons and other resources by sea to the terrorists in Cabo Delgado. The territory affected by the insurgency, he maintains, is simply too large for just 4,000 troops to control. Estereza says he's deeply concerned about what's about to unfold in northern Mozambique.
And that's my biggest worry, that there's no clear idea what the military ought to achieve in Cabo Delgado. They've been deployed, but what is it that we expect them to do? Because we all know that the solution to this problem is a political solution, it's an economic solution.
He believes it'll be very difficult for the SADC and Rwandese forces to find the militants over such a massive area with harsh terrain.
It's probably going to take a lot of time, it's going to take a lot of forces, and you need to get the right force ratios in place. It is not a matter that can be done with a small token force, because you need sustainable operations over a period of time. And
Estereza says it'll also be hard to coordinate troops from all the different countries.
Alliances are traditionally not very good in fighting counterinsurgency wars, and we've just seen that in Afghanistan. But you cannot do counterinsurgency without good governance, the so-called comprehensive approach. If you don't do good governance and if you don't come with a comprehensive approach, your military action is doomed.
Estereza says the military phase of any counterterrorism operation boils down to the physical annihilation of the insurgents. But he adds, according to his knowledge, the occupying troops are nowhere close to achieving this because they don't know where their enemies are.
Have we gone through the process of location and isolation? And are we now at a point where we can start with the eradication process? If we are not, we are setting ourselves up for big problems.
SADC says its strategies to beat IS in Mozambique are evolving, and it's certain its operations in Cabo Delgado will eventually be successful. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Thousands of Cameroonians marched in several towns and villages for World Peace Day today, calling for a ceasefire between the military and separatists and saying they're tired of burying civilians caught up in the fighting. But as Muki Edwin Kindzeka reports from Yaounde, the conflict is not likely to end anytime soon.
This song, "We Want Peace," by Cameroonian artist Salatiel, blasts through speakers in Yaounde, capital of the Central African state, on the 2021 World Peace Day. In the music, Salatiel says Cameroon needs immediate peace, without which the entire country will sink into ruins. Esther Njomo Omam, director of the non-governmental organization Reach Out Cameroon, organized the rally. She says Cameroonians should give peace a chance.
It is our collective responsibility to be peace mediators wherever we find ourselves in our various communities. And we're calling on our government to receive the message, the call for peace, with an open heart. Same are we saying that please, the non-state armed groups, receive our call for peace with an open heart. This is the time for appeasement.
Similar peace walks took place in Boya, Bamenda and Kumba, all cities in western regions where armed separatist groups are active, and the northern towns of Marwa, Garua and Goundere, all close to Cameroon's border with Nigeria, the site of many incursions by the militant group Boko Haram. Omam pleaded with jihadist groups, government troops, and separatist groups to declare a ceasefire. She said silencing the guns is the only way the lives of civilians, government troops, jihadist, and separatist fighters can be spared from either wounds or dying. The government said a majority of people who took part at the peace walks were women affected by the crisis. Some of them said they lost family members in the crisis. Marie-Thérèse Abena-Ondua is Cameroon's Minister of Women's Empowerment and the Family. She says the military, ordered by government to protect civilians, cannot drop weapons.
I'm begging that our children, our young brothers, our sisters who are in the bush exerting or preparing to come and exert violence should give up violence, leave the bush, because we have all become beggars of peace. So I'm pleading for all of us to do all that is within our reach so that our beloved country can become a land of peace.
Rosemary Etaka of the Cameroon Civil Society took part in the peace walk in Yaoundé. She says the armed conflicts in Cameroon will not end unless there is a ceasefire.
Within 5 years, we've had guns, we've had an increase in weapons entering the country, and we don't know who is carrying these weapons. We don't know the number of people that are armed. So I think it is better to stop it now so that by the time we retrieve the guns, maybe it will be less than if we allow it to go further.
The United Nations General Assembly declared the annual International Day of Peace in 1981. The day is devoted to strengthening the ideas of peace through observing 24 hours of ceasefire and non-violence. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Field Marshal Mohamed Hussein Tantawi, the army chief who headed Egypt's military junta after the ouster of President Hosni Mubarak in the Arab Spring, has died at age 85. He was Mubarak's loyal defense minister for some 20 years and chaired the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces. After Mubarak's ouster, Tantawi ruled Egypt for 17 months until the election of Islamist President Mohamed Morsi in June 2017. 2 months later, Morsi removed Tantawi from his post and named General Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, then head of the Egyptian intelligence service, as defense minister. El-Sisi would eventually oversee the removal of Morsi from power and become Egypt's president in 2014. Tantawi was often perceived as a possible presidential candidate after Mubarak's ouster, but his age and reported ill health counted against him. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehigis Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC.